all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Eric Fretz, back with another great episode of Veterans Radio. And today we're going to be having a fascinating conversation with my friend Christina, who has recently completed a thru-hike on the Appalachian Trail. That's quite an accomplishment. She has a background in the Army, and we'll talk a little bit about how her experience in the military has informed her experiences on the trail, and a little bit about the sort of the tribe that she found while hiking on the trail. So welcome, Christina, and maybe tell us just a little bit about your background.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much, Eric, for having me, and thank you to the Veterans Radio for this opportunity. So I grew up in Michigan in Standish, joined the military out of high school at 19, the Army specifically, as a refueler attached to a tank battalion and stationed at Fort Carson in Colorado. Okay. From there, I did one deployment in Afghanistan where I lost some friends in an IED blast, and I really questioned my faith through that experience. And, you know, when I had heard about the Appalachian Trail and just some of the experiences that people had, their healing, specifically veterans, just experiencing healing out there for some of the traumas that they had experienced in the military. At the time, I thought that it would be so awesome to be able to do that for myself and maybe see how I could heal through that. And so, as life would have it, it would take me in other directions and kind of other things would come up. And
it was a roundabout path. You know, you did some great work with the VA. You were a surgical tech.
I'm a thru-hiker, a surgical tech, a sister, an aunt, a daughter, that I'm a child of God.
Yes.
And my faith is the foundation of my life. And without it, I would not be here. So all the glory for the experiences that I've had and for my completion of the Appalachian Trail goes to God. Like, he gets all the glory for that, because there's just no way that I could have done it in my own strength. So it's important for me that I say that. So when I got out of the military, I went to school to become a surgical tech. And through that, I've been a surgical tech for almost 4 years now. I was working at the VA hospital in Ann Arbor before I made the commitment that I was going to hike the trail. And so when my mom and I were in Gatlinburg in Tennessee, I went out and hiked a little bit of the Appalachian Trail, and that was kind of what brought this idea back up of like
appetizer.
Yeah, of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to go and I'm going to hike this hike, and nothing's going to get in my way. I, you know, had this vision of just discovering my greatest potential and God's next steps for my life. Mm-hmm. And just felt very enthusiastic, like this was the next step in my life.
Wonderful.
So through that, I started the planning process of just kind of learning a little bit about the Appalachian Trail, kind of what I could expect just through other people's experiences on YouTube and talking to people.
Kind of planning your mission.
Yeah, I was planning my mission, just trying to get a sense of what I was getting myself into. And I don't really think it's, I mean, it's a lot like the military in the sense of you don't really know what you're getting yourself into until you actually get yourself into it. And so it was definitely a big learning experience. And, you know, I just really learned as I prepared.
Had you done a ton of camping or backpacking prior to this? Would you say you had like sort of low, moderate, or heavy prior outdoor exposure?
Yeah, so like growing up, we did some camping, you know, as a family. In the military, I was stationed out at Fort Carson in Colorado. So I did a lot of day hikes out there, just spent a lot of time up in the mountains exploring. Just always loved the peace, the tranquility, just being in nature. I just always
super restorative,
one with nature. And so I had a little bit of that experience, but nothing too crazy with like multiple overnights or anything like long sections.
You had a decent baseline of outdoor experience. But yeah, you were comfortable in the outdoors.
Absolutely.
You needed to spend a night outdoors. It wasn't, yes. It didn't seem like the end of the world.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of people who, when you tell them like, oh, you're going to have to sleep outside. It's just, do you live through that? Yes, you do. We've done it for tens of thousands of years.
Exactly.
Actually.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Do.
So what was the preparation cycle like for you? Was it a 3 month, 6 month? What did it?
So, yeah, from the moment that I stepped foot on the trail in Gatlinburg, Tennessee in April with my mom, from that point was when I started planning. So it took me about a year. And in that year, I set myself up financially. Mm-hmm. So I had actually, the previous year, had paid off all of my debt. So I was debt-free.
Excellent move.
I was saving up money, just working a ton of hours at work as a surgical tech. I was watching YouTube videos, just watching other people's experiences.
There's some great online communities, too, that talk all about this.
Oh, absolutely. Gear, you know.
And some great books that have been written on it.
Absolutely recommend A Walk in the Woods book. That was hilarious and just kind of prepared me for some of the little fun things that I would experience out on the trail, but also some of the hardships. And just really tried to prepare mentally, but I really felt that this was my mission, that this was where I was supposed to be, and that no matter what challenges came up, everything was going to be okay, and it was going to align. I was going to do it.
That sense of purpose and destiny is really wonderful.
It really was. Like, God was like,
so you did your preparation. Sounds great. You got your budget set up. You got your gear. Mm-hmm. You tidied up everything. You put your stuff in storage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was down to the trailhead, and off you went. So what was the date you started?
So I started on April 7th, 2023. So
you were a NOBO, meaning a northbound.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
So you start in Georgia, end up in Maine, and try to get there before it gets too late in the season.
Yes, because they close Mount Katahdin around the 16th of October every year.
Okay.
So the goal was to get there before October 16th. It took me 5 months. So I started April 7th, and then I summited Mount Katahdin September 5th.
Wow.
So
that's pretty fast.
Yes,
Well, as a matter of fact, I think I might have heard your trail nickname was
Wheels.
Yeah, go pretty quick. All right, and I find it amazing because, of course, I would routinely do deep country backpacking expeditions with the Boy Scouts, and it's sort of a different vibe. And we'd be taking weeks of food and no resupply, and we had to, so we wouldn't be encountering any other people. But I would routinely carry a backpack that was over 80 pounds. And I understand that that your goal weight, for once you really got things the way you liked it, how much did your pack weigh?
My pack weighed about 23 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe my shoes weighed more than that. That's incredible. So, yeah, and you're in very good shape, so you would cover a lot of miles. What was your longest number of miles? What was your longest trail day?
So my longest trail day was 26.67 miles.
Okay, so basically a marathon. Okay. Very impressive.
It was, but I was also hiking with a guy named Kid Rock at the time. He is young, in his 20s.
Good pace.
We both just had a really great pace. We actually hit 1,800 miles together that day that we hiked.
Wonderful.
So that was pretty special. And it was a really great challenge. We had hiked up a bunch of really steep mountains. I think we hit 4 or 5 mountains that day that we hiked over. So,
and anybody, I know the hikers out there listening, it's not the mileage, it's the elevation.
It really is. Absolutely. Yeah. Because, it's funny you say that, the elevation gain and loss is equivalent to climbing Mount Everest 16 times.
Over the course of the
hike? Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So you're traversing approximately 464,464
vertical.
Yes.
Change in elevation.
Yes.
Wow, that is a lot. That is huge.
It really is a lot. It's about 5 million steps, also equivalent to 5
That's the classic
steps.
Of one foot in front of the other.
Yes.
Wow, really impressive.
Indeed.
One of the things I like best about the stories, and I did actually come visit you once while you were on the trail, was trail family, which you call the tramily, which really struck me as had a lot of similar feeling to your platoon or your squad or your unit in the military. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how you saw those emerging, because as you started out as this sort of solo hiker, mm-hmm. Very relatively quickly, as I understand it, you would start to have these little groups that would coalesce. And then in some cases, these would last for thousands of miles of hiking, mm-hmm. and really struck me as a kind of a wonderful social support and a sort of a bonding exercise. So maybe talk a little bit about that, and also how much your faith and the faith of others that you encountered kind of bore on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it really is a lot like the military in that sense of, you know, just camaraderie. Everybody's out there, you know, on the same mission for the same purpose of, you know, finishing this hike and just the experience and everything else that comes along with it. I really prayed to God before I left about meeting great godly people out there. And Christians, and even people who weren't necessarily Christians. And just, I prayed to be open to whoever he might bring into mm-hmm. my life and to just be able to be a good steward, you know, of these people and just sort of love them for where they are, for who they are, for what their experiences have been, and just have that compassion for their story and for who they are. I met the couple of guys on day 10, it was approximately mile 69 or so. I met them and we would hike together up into Hot Springs in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Really great guys, Christian guys, really felt like I had found my people. I mean, it was funny because we were talking about how cool it would be to summit Mount Katahdin together at the end and just all be together at the top of that mountain. And, you know, because we really just formed a bond so quickly over our shared faith. Mm-hmm. And so when we kind of split up in North Carolina, I...
Kind of bittersweet?
Yeah, it was very bittersweet. I cried. I just wasn't prepared for that loss because, like I had mentioned before, you know, losing my friends in Afghanistan, it was really traumatic. And I never up to that point had been like okay with losing people. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of felt like another loss, but I knew it wasn't necessarily a loss in the sense that I would never see them again, but it was a gain because I would be open to meeting other people.
Sure.
And, you know, there'd be other opportunities to obviously see each other down the trail. And we had this great plan of, like, hopefully we can come together.
There's an ebb and a flow. You know, yeah. People leave the trail for injury or to attend a personal business. They come back. They hike again. They catch up to you. Or
yes.
They hike different sections. And so it's a very very dynamic situation. So the chances are maybe you do see them again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely. And so from that, I actually met two of my other great friends who I would hike almost 1,300 miles with, Shamrock and Navigator.
And for those who don't know, everybody gets a trail name eventually.
Yes, yes.
And so you become known by this within the lore of pretty much the year that you're traveling. Mm-hmm. That is then how people refer to you. So it might be like, oh, have you met Wheels? Oh, I met Wheels in South Carolina or
mm-hmm.
something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I would meet Shamrock and Navigator. And Navigator was this amazing woman. It's so hard to like explain about her, but like her heart is amazing. She's a physical therapy assistant and she lives in Wisconsin. You know, we really were able to be super open about our experiences with faith. And she had like a rather tumultuous upbringing in her faith mm-hmm. and just made her question, you know, God, the sovereignty of him, you know, his goodness, and just a lot of...
struggle?
Just a lot of struggle there with the way that she was raised and, like, the family dynamic mm-hmm. of it.
But sometimes the things you have to fight hardest for then become the things that you can hold tightly to and value the most.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And so, you know, I really just wanted to encourage her and be a light in her life for as long as however, you know, many miles that was for us. And so I just made it my mission to just show up and to show her the love of God in whatever way that meant for her and her life at the time. And it's funny because I was actually just over in Wisconsin visiting her for Veterans Day. And she told me that, she was like, "Do you remember when we were in Dismal Falls in Virginia?" And I was like, "Of course I do. It was the most beautiful day that we had out there. I mean, one of the most beautiful days we had. You know, the sun was shining. We were sitting out on the rocks. I mean, the water was flowing. These beautiful falls.
Sounds
I mean,
perfect.
It was this perfect day." And she was like, "That was the day I gave my life to Christ." Nice. And I was like, "Oh my gosh." I started bawling, of course, because I was just so excited for her and just this new journey that she was going to be embarking on. I knew it was going to be one where she was going to experience the fullness and the love of God in her life.
Yeah, so sort of a mission accomplished. And it's, I tell you, the outdoor experiences, you know, in my years of doing similar things, you know, psychology, we sort of know from psychology of friendships, right? You know, about 50 hours, you go from a stranger to kind of a decent acquaintance. And another 50 hours, you get into that sort of, oh, we're friends and we probably could keep in touch over the years. And by the time you get to about 200 hours of shared experience and dedicated interaction, you really are on the cusp of something significant. And, you know, so it's either it's your first college roommate. You know, basically, almost no one has a neutral opinion of the college roommate from the first year because it's that first person you met. You log those hours whether you liked it or not. And so when I ask in my classes, I'll typically see about a third to a half. We'll say I still maintain a friendship with them. And then, of course, we know from being in the outdoors and the shared adventure slash stress accelerates that kind of bonding. Yes. And so these conditions are really ideal for forming very solid and deep and meaningful friendships. And it sounds like you've made quite a bunch of them.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, and especially with the weather that we had out there, because this was the rainiest season that the Appalachian Trail has seen.
Yeah, there was a point where some of the northern sections were like shut down and wiped out. Like it was unsafe. Mm-hmm. People were getting washed away.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I just remember walking and trudging through all of these, you know, all like...
Is that the military preparation? What's that phrase? If it ain't raining, we ain't training,
exactly.
Right?
So, yeah. Yes. I mean, I just remember doing that with them and telling them that, like, this would suck without you guys.
This
would really suck without you. And I'm so glad that we're doing this together, that we have these experiences, and, you know, that we are all people of faith and that we can really just trust in God through this. And I always reminded them that this is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. And just, you know, that was like always at the forefront because there were some really questionable days where you're just like, I can't do this.
Sounds challenging. So I thought this might be an interesting point to segue. I mean, obviously, some really great days and great memories. Obviously, had to face some challenges. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd be interested to know kind of like, what was your first significant challenge where you maybe had some doubts or some real concerns? And then maybe what was your biggest one? Maybe those are the same things, maybe they're not. But, and sort of what were they and kind of how did you sort of surmount those?
Yeah, absolutely. My faith, first of all. I think the place where I really questioned why I was out there and why I was doing what I was doing was in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
But previous to this, I had been experiencing just some uncomfortableness in my leg. I was having some sciatica pain, just really struggling to get through the days. And I was, I just remember crying a lot, especially through like the Shenandoahs in Virginia because of the pain, just not really sure that I could keep doing it the way that my leg was feeling.
Okay.
And I just remember just crying out to God, like, Lord, please take this thorn from me because I cannot keep going in this kind of pain. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on the other side of that, I realized that there was purpose in the pain. I had to endure and keep trusting that God had a purpose for it for me. And so, you know, I was dealing with that in Virginia, and then seeing you at Harper's Ferry in West Virginia was a real, like, turning point there. And, you know, it just really renewed my sense of hope and just excitement. Wonderful. You know, because I knew that I was also going to be seeing my mom and my niece and my nephew up in through New York and New Jersey. But Pennsylvania, as much as a great time I had in West Virginia and just through Virginia in general, was absolutely beautiful, my favorite spot. Pennsylvania with all the rocks really got to me mentally.
Okay.
I not only was I struggling mentally, but I was struggling physically because I was still experiencing this pain in my leg.
I mean, you actually had to come off trail and go to the hospital for...
I did, yeah, when we were in Harper's Ferry, I went to, D.C., and so...
So thanks to the VA, thank you.
And thank you, yes, thank you to the VA, because I was able to get, you know, some Toradol shots and just
keep going.
Yeah, get some encouragement to keep going.
But it sounds like you found a way through it.
I did. I found my way through it, you know, with God and just the hope of, you know, seeing my family and the hope of the end of the trail, you know, in sight. And
so maybe with a couple of minutes that we have left, I'd love to hear sort of what is the summit story? What was that day like? Because that had to be amazing.
Oh, boy. Yeah. It was fantastic. We had great weather. It's funny because I'm bringing this full circle now. The two guys that I met at mile 69, who we were super excited about the potential for linking back up and finishing the trail together at Mount Katahdin, that actually happened.
That's wonderful.
And so the one guy, Chopsticks, I had met up with him again, and we started hiking consistently in New Hampshire. And then Survivor, who was a section hiker, finishing his last section from Gorham in New Hampshire up to Mount Katahdin, hopped on trail. We all met up several days after that and hiked together the rest of the way up to Mount Katahdin in Maine. I eventually said goodbye to Shamrock, actually in Harper's Ferry in West Virginia, and then Navigator before I entered into Hanover, New Hampshire. I said goodbye to those guys, met back up with Survivor and Chopsticks, and we hiked on Summit of Mount Katahdin together.
It's a fairly remote area. It's not like you can drive up there. I mean, it really is. No, like the people who are there hiked up there.
Mm-hmm,
it's not like there's a parking lot with people with cars.
No. Yeah, you hike at the base and then you hike up. And it was a challenge. It was absolutely
a challenge.
You can
just basically see for miles, right?
You can absolutely
off into Canada. Apparently there's even a continuation of the trail that continues to go into
IAT,
Canada if you
need
a little bonus time.
Yep.
Excellent.
Yes. And so just being up there with them.
A tremendous end to the adventure.
It really was. It was a tremendous end.
It is so great.
It was very special. I couldn't have dreamed a better ending to my thru-hike. And there's obviously a lot more stories. There's obviously a lot more things that I'm still processing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Maybe write a book someday.
Maybe I'll write a book. But for now, it's on my Instagram, so.
Awesome. Well, yeah, what is that Instagram in case people want to check that out?
So my Instagram is _GLLK_.
So one more time.
So _GLLK_.
Okay.
Is my
find
Instagram.
Out more about the adventure there. Why? Yeah. Thank you, Chris. This has been my pleasure to host today. This has been my friend Christina Gombeski, and she has talked about her adventures on the Appalachian Trail. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us on this episode of Veterans Radio, and I hope you all have a wonderful day. We'll see you around next time.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. PFC Sammy Davis is often called the real Forrest Gump. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Davis enlisted in the Army. He volunteered for the artillery because his father had been an artilleryman in World War II and then asked to be sent to Vietnam. In November 1967, his unit was helicoptered into Fire Base Cudgel. Shortly after midnight, Battery C came under a heavy mortar attack. At the same time, 1,500 Viet Cong launched an intensive ground assault. Davis's squad was operating a 105mm howitzer that fired 18,000 beehive darts in each shell. When he saw how close the VC were, he took over a machine gun and provided cover for his crew. Convinced they couldn't survive the attack, he rammed a shell into the gun and fired point blank into the enemy. A mortar round exploded nearby, knocking Davis to the ground, but he got up and kept firing the howitzer. When he ran out of beehives, he fired a white phosphorus shell, and then the last round he had, a propaganda shell filled with leaflets. He heard yelling from the other side of the river, and despite the fact that he couldn't swim, paddled across on an air mattress. Other GIs followed him. He found three wounded soldiers, gave them morphine, and provided covering fire as another GI helped one of the wounded across the river. Davis pulled the other two through the water on the air mattress and resumed the fight. Just before dawn, Davis was wounded in the back and buttocks by friendly fire. President Johnson presented him the Medal of Honor on November 19, 1968. Footage of LBJ putting the medal around Davis's neck appeared in the movie Forrest Gump, with Tom Hanks' head substituted for Davis's. Gump's fictional citation was loosely based on Davis's real one.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. Even small actions can make a world of difference. If you know a veteran in crisis, please call the Veterans Crisis Line, 800-273-8255, 800-273-8255. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site, or at the web, veteransradio.org is our new URL, veteransradio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today a couple of representatives from the nonprofit Zero Day, which our Veteran Radio listeners are going to listen and learn about. We've got Nate Cropsey on. Nate, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
And Jim Dentler. James, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, let's start with this. I'll give a little bio on both of you guys, and then I'm going to ask one of you to talk about Zero Day a bit and how you got involved. But Nate is a Marine who is now with the Michigan Army National Guard in the role of a chaplain. That's an interesting transition, and with Zero Day, he's the director of veteran support projects. James Dentler is with the full time with the Michigan Air National Guard, but spends his passionate time as the assistant manager of outdoor adventure therapy for Zero Day. Zero Day started in about 2012. With Chuck Ems and Tim Honeycutt getting together and saying, "Hey, there's a homeless veteran problem we've got to tackle," and they started tackling it. It's really expanded over the 10, 12 years at this point. Nate, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about Zero Day.
Yeah, so I got involved with Zero Day. I was post my active duty time in the Marine Corps. and was going to school and trying to find out kind of where I fit. And met this guy, Tim Honeycutt, and he basically said, hey, do you want to go on a hunting trip? And started researching Zero Day a little bit, find out what they do. And it was kind of all downhill from there. I rode out in the vehicle with Tim about a 20-hour trip one way and just asked him all sorts of questions, got to know him and find out what Zero Day is about. And then locked him in the truck for about a 20-hour drive on the way home and to figure out how I can be part of it. And so Zero Day, we do a whole bunch of different things. I work with a lot of our veteran support programs. We have our headquarters at Silver Star Apartments in Battle Creek, Michigan. Down there, Silver Star Apartments houses 175 units that house veterans that have been homeless or struggling with homelessness, and do some therapy down there. We do our outdoor adventure therapy and recreation. But what I've found probably the biggest thing about Zero Day is it meets our veterans where they are, wherever they are in life. We figure out what their current reality is, and then we help them transition to focus on a personal life vision and build a bridge from where they are to where they want to go.
Well, you know, it's great timing here that this started with a hunting trip. We're talking to Nate and James during deer hunting season. Nate's already reported he's got a couple in the freezer this morning, so one for him and one from another guy. James is going out hunting later again today. So, James, why don't we start with how did you get involved with Zero Day?
Well, Jim, I appreciate it. I think this story is almost identical, actually. So another Zero Day member approached me and said, "Hey, you know, you want to go out to Utah and go on an archery elk hunt?" And I said, "Yeah, but you know, I've been married for 12 years and I work for the government, so I can't really afford to go out to Utah and go elk hunting." And he's like, "Oh, it's all paid for." And I said, "Okay, what's the catch?" And so the same thing, I rolled out to Utah. It's a 20-hour drive in a vehicle, and I asked a bunch of questions and then didn't really get too many answers from the people I rode out there with, but then I rode back with Nate and a couple other Zero Day guys and got some more answers. And, you know, prior to Zero Day, I'd been involved in some other nonprofits. And honestly, like I won't name any names, but honestly, I wasn't very impressed. There was some times where I thought that veterans were uncomfortable and that sometimes they were being used as PR tools. And I just wasn't okay with that. So I was kind of leery going into Zero Day, but I very quickly found out that the camaraderie and the sense of belonging that you get from Zero Day is absolutely what, you know, veterans that are coming off active duty, what they're seeking. So, you know, being in the outdoors, that's my wheelhouse. I love it. And the outdoor adventure therapy stuff, and I think Nate can probably attest to this, is it makes a huge impact. I think it allows veterans to open up. You know, when you get another vet who's stubborn and prideful and, you know, doesn't want to, you know, air out their dirty laundry and let them know or let somebody else know that they need help, it's easier for them to talk to somebody that somewhat
other stubborn and prideful and grumpy veterans. I think you've just characterized all of them.
Yeah. So I guess what I see is the outdoors, whether it's, I mean, we're fishing, we're camping, we're doing hunting, you know, whatever we can do in the outdoors. I see it as an avenue to let veterans open up and let us know what kind of help they need. And most of the time you don't get that unless you're sitting by a fire at base camp, having a conversation, you know.
And James, there's a lot of, you know, real empirical research that the therapeutic value of this outdoor therapy, whether it be hunting or fishing. And 0 days, not just here in Michigan. Give us some breadth and scope of the outdoor adventure therapy programs that you've been a part of.
We take an annual trip to the Uinta Mountains in Utah. We do an archery elk hunt. Usually that season is about 25 days, and veterans will stagger in throughout the 25 days. Obviously, we're not asking them to leave their jobs and their family for that entire time, but we usually they stagger in and out. And Tim Honeycutt, the CEO, he typically stays out there for the entire time. And we've had some pretty good success this year. I think we took 11 or 12 vets. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nate, but I think we took 11 or 12, and we had two elk harvested. So that was a pretty an amazing trip. Also, we just sent, I think, 4 or 5 vets to Kentucky on a bear hunt. We had one successful harvest there. We've done some hog hunting down south. I can't remember if that was, I wasn't a part of that, Nate. Was that South Carolina, North Carolina? Where was that?
Yeah, that was down in the Georgia area.
Okay, so I stand corrected. Apparently, I'm not very good with a map. But, there were some down in Georgia. So there's no boundaries to 0 day or the 0 day outdoor adventure therapy program. We try to get out there as much as we can, and we've had numerous opportunities to get vets out hunting. And then every year I started, this year will be our third annual. We do a winter camping thing up north. It's just one of those bucket list things that I wanted to do, and we have a great time. We've done some, we just go up and we set up a couple tents and put some heaters in them, and we hang out. We go coyote hunting and hang out by the fire, and it's been a pretty amazing experience. So this year in February it'll be our third year of doing that. I haven't got Nate to go yet. I think he's afraid of the cold.
Well, you know, yep. Those Marines, you know how they are. They're very delicate. Let's talk a little bit about, as I said, 0 day kind of started attacking the homeless problem that it saw in the Lansing area, and it's been involved in a lot of different, with a lot of different organizations on housing issues and construction projects. Nate, can you talk any about that?
Some of it that happened up in Lansing was just a little bit before I actually came on with 0 day. But I know that Tim Honeycutt, when he started with his partners, their intent was to begin teaching the construction trades to the veteran population in Lansing. And so they would take on projects and have those veterans come out and actually learn construction skills on the jobs that 0 day was taking on. And now with our headquarters in Battle Creek, the apartment complex there has 175 units. And in order to live there, you have to be a veteran, a honorably served vet. And you also have to struggle with the homelessness side of things. So that facility is usually 80 to 95% full. A lot of vets from Michigan. When I first started working there, we had vets that were World War II era that were living there at the time. And now we actually just got a grant that is a grant to help with the homelessness side of things as well. So hopefully here in the next several months or so, we'll be starting another project. We'd like to focus on single family dwellings because we're finding more and more families with kids that are dealing with the homelessness side of things. So we see that need, and we're trying to step into that arena and provide some more housing for them as well.
Well, I think that's something that a nonprofit like 0 day can be more nimble about. Certainly homelessness among female veterans who often come along with some kids in tow don't fit the model of, well, we've got a one unit that you can go to. You really need that single family house for that kind of situation and that type of veteran, don't you?
Yeah, you really do. Otherwise, you end up having several families that are letting the veteran and their kids crash on the couch or in the basement, something along those lines. But living on top of each other, it adds to some of the different issues that we struggle with veterans, with the anger, the post-traumatic stress, any of those underlying factors that make it a little bit more difficult to stay in a house.
And Nate, tell us some more about, because beyond construction and helping vets get jobs and in that field and everything sort of associated with that housing issue, you've got a pretty wide array of veteran support programs. Can you talk about what Zero Day does in that area?
Yeah, so a lot of our support programs actually, they kind of touch each other, I guess you'd say. Like the outdoor adventure side that James is very intricately working in, we use that as an incubator for some of the other activities that we have going on. For instance, we have a family program that we do where we teach evidence-based practices for healthy parenting. And we use that to we use that to help soldiers and veterans become better parents because they want to be a good dad or a good mom. And one of the ways that we can help supplement that or encourage that is having them go out and do a fishing trip together or do a bow hunt together or something like that. But the programs are distinctly separate. We've just rolled out a new system. We call it the NOS system. It's a mental health assessment and a social determinant assessment. The social determinant piece is what are the resources in the community that might help offset some of the anxiety, some of the stress. Let's say we have a veteran that's trying to keep a roof over their heads and they're struggling to keep the lights on. Well, based off of their zip code, we can begin to work with that veteran on finding additional resources to help keep the lights on, keep a roof over their head, that type of thing.
Yeah, and I want to touch on both of those things for a minute because as you talk about being a healthy parenting and saying, hey, we're going to take the whole family out on a fishing trip or a bow hunting trip, part of what you do here is take the financial pressure off so that they can actually enjoy that trip, which mm-hmm. they probably wouldn't be able to do without the financial support, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And on the mental health side of things, I think there's a lot of services out there, but the challenge is always that connection or networking to the appropriate available providers. And it sounds like that's what you're doing is not so much recreating the whole mental health therapy environment or ecosystem, but making sure that veterans who need that help can mm-hmm. you kind of plug them into it, if I understand it.
Yeah, so we try to use our network to help those soldiers and veterans actually be able to walk through the door, knowing that this entity that they're going to talk to is a veteran-friendly entity. The other side of that is with James and what he's doing at the outdoor recreation side or outdoor therapy side, is the research is showing that I think it's a half hour a day, half hour to 90 minutes a day. Like 4 days, 4 or 5 days a week in the outdoors, being engulfed in the outdoors, that actually over time begins to reduce post-traumatic stress symptoms by close to 30%, which is phenomenal. So we begin to take a holistic approach. If you're in the outdoors, if you're in nature and the stress and anxiety begins to come down, if you are connected with a therapist that's or a chaplain or somebody that's willing to talk to you and work through some of the more intricate issues, and you begin to alleviate some of the stressors of everyday life by helping keep the lights on, well, now we're starting to actually build quality of life for our veteran population.
I want to point out to Veteran Radio listeners, because you may know somebody out there who needs some help, and Zero Day may be the right place to go to. But what Nate just mentioned and James talked a little bit about too is that Zero Day is involved in making sure there's what I call a warm handoff to from the veteran who needs a certain type of assistance to somebody at the other end who's veteran-friendly, who knows how to work with veterans in these kind of situations. It's not walking in and doing a cold call and saying, hey, I need some help. It really is a warm handoff, isn't it, Nate?
Yes and no. The idea of helping walk them into a place where they need help, for sure. The other side is we don't seem to lose too many of our veterans in the 0-day space. James and myself, for instance, once we started getting where we needed to be, we began to ingrain 0-day into our everyday lives. So even with them going to see a counselor or getting their house put back together, whatever it might be, they stay in contact with 0-day in some way, shape, or form. Some more than others, some longer than others. But I haven't seen too many people that have just walked out of our space and never come back.
Well, that's a testament to how well it works. James, can you talk a little bit about how many outdoor therapy programs 0-day puts on in a year? Is it 2? Is it 10? How does the size of the program work, and maybe how many veterans do you get to touch in a year?
I don't think we have like a specific number. We have our annual trips that we do. I mentioned the Utah elk trip and the winter camping thing. The Utah elk trip, I think they've been doing that 7-8 years now, pretty close to since the beginning. And then, you know, the winter camping thing, those are typically the only like scheduled events that are scheduled annually. The rest of the stuff is mostly based around seasons and fishing times, like whatever the times are available, and what opportunities come our way. I think, you know, a lot of everything we do is based off of grant writing. So that, you know, the funding for a lot of that stuff is all based off of grant writing. I've dabbled a little bit in the grant writing space, since I got, into 0-day, but like you said, the intent for that stuff is to, you know, get the families involved. Actually, my wife and I, did a fishing trip last year. It was just her and I and, a guide that 0-day, took care of for us. And it was pretty awesome. My wife tells me I'm a better person when I'm in the outdoors and involved with 0-day. So, I think that, the sky's the limit, really. I mean, we have a foundation for an outdoor therapy program, but if somebody, you know, had an idea and said, hey, we want to do a whitewater rafting trip, or we want to do we want to hike the Appalachian Trail, like whatever, the sky's the limit. I think Tim would entertain it and enable us. Like I say this all the time, that Tim's an enabler, and a lot of times that's taken in a negative context, and in this case it's not. At some point I think you have to sometimes reel in the veterans. You know, if you got a guy that's working in a factory, he's underemployed, and his goal in life in 10 years is to be an astronaut heading to the moon, you might need to bring him back down to the reality. But for the most part, the sky's the limit. And whatever these guys want to do, the network that Nate talked about, him and Nate.
Part of this, it seems like to me, James and Nate, is that 0-day's been able to partner, as you mentioned, James, with a lot of other nonprofits and organizations to help accomplish the goal. And Nate, do you see that in the counseling and therapy that you do? And is that inbred into the DNA of 0-day? Is that partnering aspect?
Yeah, the partnering aspect, the way that we approach things is we look at the veteran, and we take a look at their current reality. Where are you right now? And then, like James was saying, sometimes when we look at the personalized vision, where do they want to go? We need to make it help them see a little bit more realistically. But we meet the veteran where they are currently, where they currently are in their life, in their family, in their job. And then we help them build that bridge. And for some, it's making that connection with a therapist. For some, it's a parenting class. For others, it might be, let's rework your resume, or what are the other job opportunities to move from a job to a career. But it's a focus on the individual person and the individual family, and then finding the resources that help build that puzzle and put that puzzle together.
Well, it's obviously been a successful program or set of programs and continues to expand. If folks are interested in knowing more about Zero Day, where would you direct them?
Yeah, I would direct them to our website at zero-day.us. If you get on there, you'll get a pretty good idea of the wide range and variety of things that we do. You can also contact Zero Day through that website. That's probably the best and easiest way to do that.
And again, if folks are out there and they say, hey, I'd like to contribute and help support maybe some of the programs that James is doing or some of the work that Nate is doing, I assume that they could also donate resources. Maybe it's an opportunity for a fishing or a camping trip or something by going through the website. Is that right, James?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They can reach out via email or phone from the website and reach most of us. And
as we close out here, are there any of your partners or donors that you want to give a shout out to? Because they've really supported these projects for you. We always like to give them a little airtime.
Yeah, the PATH Foundation has been a big supporter of ours. They do some great stuff in the outdoors, and they like what we're doing with our veteran population, and it seemed to be a seamless fit. They've always been a good partner for us.
Well, as I say, you can't do this kind of work without good partnerships and good people supporting you. Nate Cropsey, James Dentler, we're glad you took a little time today to talk to Veterans Radio and explain what Zero Day is involved in and why it's so successful. We wish you both the best of luck out on the hunt, and thanks for your time today.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate your time. Thanks.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We would again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Prescorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.